following is a Super Network production with Super Marcy.
Look, as much as I love that we don't really see images of that film, I just want to see that film.
The terrible Australian Bea Jemine.
If they made a romantic comedy out of The Fly, this would probably be it.
It contains coarse language.
After it was over and the credits were done, my friend just looked at me and he just said, "Dude, that was
mature themes."
Her husband wants her need satisfied and she had a zombie baby with him.
Potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Listener discretion is advised. Please find us at supermarcy.com and subscribe to us via Patreon at patreon.com/thesupernetwork. Enjoy.
No, no, no! Don't be afraid! This time, it isn't one of your nightmares. This one was mine.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Podcasters of Horror, the podcast where we look at shows and films that are horror anthologies. So far, we've covered Showtime's Masters of Horror, and currently we are going through the limited series of Fear Itself. Today's episode, however, is a special bonus episode. I'm your host, Super Marcy, and normally I would have my trusty co-host, Bea Jemine, with me, but he's away at the moment. But have no fear. I have brought along a very special guest, and they are making their debut on Podcasters of Horror as well as the Super Network. Please welcome, I'm gonna say his name very wrong because I'm bad at that, Dan Mackles.
Holy cow, that's not bad at all. That is not bad at all.
And you're currently on the Sopranos Redefined podcast, and welcome to the show.
Well, hey, thanks for reaching out. It took us a while before we were actually able to settle on a date for this one.
Yes.
But I was flattered that you asked me and to talk about one of my favorite characters and the very short-lived series, Freddy's Nightmares.
Yes. Yes, good segue into what we'll be discussing. But we were meant to do this and have it done in October. But you know what? Life happens and all sorts of craziness. But we're here now. We are going to talk about Freddy's Nightmares. But particularly, we will be talking about two episodes from the show, which was the pilot episode of the horror anthology series, No More Mr. Nice Guy, and episode 14, Black Tickets. Now, I guess as we prepped for this, we kind of briefly touched on that you do remember watching the show back when it first came out.
Very much so. Yeah, very much so. I remember sitting down and watching the pilot episode on its debut. And that was way back in October of 1988. And this one sticks out in my head. And even rewatching it, I was like, yeah, I remember this. I don't remember it being quite as, janky as it was. But I mean, you kind of have to forgive it based on the time it was produced. And they didn't put the kind of money into television like they do now.
No, they certainly don't. And the budget constraints absolutely show. But I think when this came out, I might have been 3 or 4. But I don't actually remember when it was on TV in Australia. I do remember I might have been maybe 7 or 8 around about. This used to show, and I think the Friday the 13th series, which is also like an anthology, can't remember what channel, but they used to play at like midnight or something. And I remember being up and awake and kind of seeing bits and pieces, but I don't remember much at all. I just remember it was on and it was, you know, oh, this is scary, I shouldn't be watching this kind of thrill, I suppose. But it wasn't, I guess, until maybe 10, 11 years ago that I actually sat and watched all of the series.
I remember the Friday the 13th series, and I can't remember which one came out first. Something makes me want to say it was the Friday the 13th series. And that was frustrating because it had nothing to do with Friday the 13th. It was a cool little premise, but there was no Jason Voorhees. Yeah. It wasn't like the prequel to when he died as a young child and seeing his mother mourn. It was a completely separate from what we knew that title to represent.
Yeah. And just quickly looking it up, it came out a year before Freddy's Nightmare.
Yeah. And that was the cool thing about Freddy's Nightmares, because it actually had Freddy. And so much so that they gave the title of Freddy's Nightmares, not like Nightmares on Elm Street or something along those lines. But yeah, it was very exciting to actually see Freddy.
Freddy was there. He was like the Crypt Keeper, so to speak,
very much so,
of the series. So I think what Robert Englund, I think, used to like film all that stuff in a few days and it was like good to go, because he would just sort of be the bumper around the episode and say the weird odd line. But, you know, he was involved in it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, was a good kind of gimmick to have. And yeah, it was, I don't remember much of when I did rewatch like 10, 11 years ago. Upon rewatching and paying attention this time, I do have quite a bit to say, so.
We'll launch into it. Yeah. Tell me what you got. Where do you want to start?
Let's go. We will. First of all, we'll talk about the pilot episode of No More Mr. Nice Guy, which was directed by Tobe Hooper, who we know is the director behind Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Poltergeist, that movie I really love and I can't think of the title at this very second.
There's another one, Funhouse, I think was quite popular that he did.
Eaten Alive. I can't think of the really crazy space one, Life Force, that's it.
Ah, there you go.
There it is. And also, he's been discussed a few times on Podcasters because he did episodes of Masters of Horror. This one stars Robert Englund, like legit, because he's in the actual episode as well as being Freddy on the bumpers, and also stars Ian Patrick Williams, Annie Curry, Mark Herrier, and William Frankfather. The plot synopsis from IMDb. On this evening's programmed, the repulsive Freddy Krueger, Robert Englund, explains how he became the bon vivant and fashion plate who we know and hate so well. Freddy's ramblings lead to the evening's drama, all about a fellow who decides that the best way ahead is to stomp on everyone in his path. I have no idea what that synopsis is, but thanks, IMDb.
Yeah, I think they kind of missed the ball on that one. It would have just been easier to say it was a little bit of a prequel to what we have with the Elm Street series. And, you know, it speaks to the popularity of the franchise, and probably even more than the franchise, the character of Freddy Krueger, that they decided, which was rare back then, to launch a TV series. Mm. It was only 4 years since the original. So again, everyone was just clamoring for more Freddy Krueger. Yeah. And they decided this might be a great way to, you know, have the fans get a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it was the 80s was so, like, horror just had gone really, really mainstream by that point. And everyone knew who Freddy was. And if you do watch the, I don't know, it's like 7 or 8 hour documentary, Never Sleep Again, they kind of go over this point in time in that doco. Yeah, I've seen it many times. It's so good. They kind of go over this period where it was like Freddy everything. So what do they do? Let's do a TV series. And I believe the problem was with the series was it showed at an earlier time slot than it really should have.
Prime time, bitch!
And yeah, I remember it being prime time. I specifically remember watching this. I want to say it was like a Sunday night. At around 8 o'clock, and thinking like, this is kind of scary for prime time. But you know, you watch it back now, and it's also funny too when you think about how much those movies back in the 80s were heavily censored, how tame they are compared to what's come since. And they were, I guess, maybe unfairly picked on.
Absolutely, definitely. And I think Welcome to Prime Time, bitch, pretty much was on when it shouldn't be, and people complained. And I think that's, you know, kind of made the show a bit more, I guess, one that you had to kind of watch because it was bad, you know, for you to watch. Not that it was bad in quality, but kind of was. So No More Mr. Nice Guy recounts Freddy's story in a way of how when he was alive, he abducted children, and we can assume that he was, you know, doing very bad things with them and also killing them.
So that's interesting, because I mean, I always thought that was implied that since he was focusing on children, we can assume that he wasn't just taking their lives. There was a little bit more involved, and they held back from basically saying that he was a molester of children in the original series. They didn't hold back when they did the remake in 2010. They just basically like, here you go. And people lost their shit about it. And I was like, really? Like, I think it's safe to say that we all kind of figured this is what was going on. But, you know, people just want to freak out about anything that touches on their childhood. Well, I mean, I guess I could have worded that better. But I just assume that was implied with his character.
Yeah. And blah, blah, blah. My English, my words fail me today.
It happens.
They do refer to him as like the child molester and killer in Never Sleep Again, the documentary. So, you know, that was the intention when you listen to the people who created Freddy Krueger. In No More Mr. Nice Guy, we get very, very strongly hinted at that this is what's happened because there
but
are...
But they never actually
they
say it.
They don't say it.
Because that's
survivors.
A little bit too taboo, you know?
Yeah. But, you know, you have the survivors, and this is kind of meant to be like, okay, so this is Freddy Krueger. He's done all this, da-da-da-da. This is the big court case. Oh, but he gets off, and then the townspeople take the revenge. And this is like the stuff we hadn't seen at this point, or not very well, I guess.
Well, I mean, again, they never had any flashback scenes from the movies that came before this. It was always just somebody giving exposition of like, this is what happened. He got off on a technicality, and it's just sort of seeing the scene that we had heard everyone allude to. And it was kind of cool. It was interesting, though, that they had Robert Englund, but yet they never showed his face. Right, they always kept him hidden in shadows, and that court scene was kind of funny. It was like, what was there? Is there no prison threads for old Fred? He just gets to wear his sweater and hat, and that's all cool.
But, yeah,
it was kind of cool how they had a couple of scenes where you see what Freddy is seeing. He's sort of scanning across the courtroom and perhaps imagining what he would like to do to everybody as you see the bodies all kind of strewn about. I thought that was kind of was kind of it.
Yeah, there was actually some really interesting, I think, ideas and concepts, but there was just, I think, massive budgetary constraints in actually being able to pull it off really, really well. Getting this kind of backstory has always been interesting. It's like, oh, I wonder. But it is kind of hokey that he is wearing the sweater, the hat. Yeah. It's really silly. Like, no.
Could you have not just got like an orange jumper?
Right.
I mean, I think that would have worked just fine.
It's a bit too on the nose, and we'll get to how that is in this series a bit in the next episode discussion. But then it's like, oh, the guy didn't give him his Miranda rights, so they have to dismiss this. And I'm like, this not really a technicality, I guess.
But you also got to understand too, like back in that time, we didn't have a full understanding of how the law worked. Like they could say, I forgot to read him his rights. It's like, well, you're free to go now. It's like, nah, I don't think that would necessarily be the case. Perhaps a mistrial, but we're going to move you back to your holding cell, Fred.
Yeah, pretty much. So that kind of is a bit silly. And, you know, because we'd heard about, obviously, characters from the film, like their parents being in this mob, we don't see any of that. There's not that many people, which, you know, again, it's budgetary, which is a bit silly. And it kind of leads with this one cop. And, you know, if they did have the money and they could have had, like, you know,
John Saxon. Which is fine if you can't bring him in. Yeah. I can accept that. But can we not just make that character Nancy's father? Does that not make more sense than
have someone that looks like him at least, and have that be, you know, his character? Because it would have made more sense in this context, because, you know, he was one of the ones that like led this thing against him.
Or at least have him there. There should have been some, because I understand that they needed to have this cop, you know, reach a terrible fate, which you can't do with as Thompson. Yeah, I think Thompson was the last name, because he's going to go on into the other films. But it just to have no other connection other than Freddy Krueger, I think, was a missed opportunity, and not seeing young Nancy and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, like the thing with Freddy was, you know, from the films, yeah, it was very low budget. But, you know, thinking that they've got this series, like he could have put a little bit more into your pilot and, you know, fleshed it out a bit more. But, you know, that's sadly not what happened. But overall, like, I think it's a solid episode. Like, you know, it tells this story that we've been curious about, and it does it in a pretty decent way, you know, despite its flaws. And I kind of appreciate how we just kind of hear Freddy and we see him from, like, you know, maybe the mouth down, or
he's obscured in every shot
from the back. And then when he's like Freddy, when he turns into the Freddy we know, we see that. It was kind of, I think, a little clever device, but you know that it's Robert Englund is playing the role. Yeah, the acting from these actors, and no offense to them, it was pretty bad.
Yeah, it's tough. And it's one of those things, too, where it is easy to go back and look at a show that's like, what is that? It's got to be closing with 30 years old, right? And you're like, that's just kind of what you got from quote unquote network television back then, especially something that not a lot of people would have wanted to put their name to this. This is where you get a lot of people who are journeyman actors, or like we're going to find out in the next episode, we talk about young up and comers where here you can do this, because probably no one's ever going to watch it other than this little niche audience. Yeah. So you can sort of hide, if you will. Mm. But I remember the one scene that I couldn't wait to see again. And that was where after Freddy's been released and they have, I believe it's the police officer's house, and they have a couple of guards there. And he's like, oh, here, have some chicken. And you got Freddy kind of sneaking around the corner and then you don't actually see him take him out, but he drops the plate of chicken and then the blood splatters all down. I remember that being terrifying as a kid. We watch it now and all I can picture is, just drop it. And here, yeah, grab me the ketchup bottle and we'll just spurt some on there and we're good to go. It's just like, that's how things were done back in the day, right?
Yeah.
But still, to that scene, I also thought it was cool where after that, I believe it's after he dispatches that cop, you can see Freddy peering in through the window at the daughters and he hears screaming. And again, that's probably his fantasy of what he is looking forward to taking place. So I thought those scenes were kind of well done.
Yeah, like it really had potential. And it, again, like obviously the script could have used a bit more work, but I'm trying to remember. I mean, I only watched it fresh, but my memory just doesn't function like at all. Did they ever explain anything about why if Freddy dies, it's going to be even worse? Because I felt like that went unexplained. Just the daughter kept saying like, Dad, don't kill him. It'll make it much worse.
No.
It's never explained, like, at all. But, it's been a little bit since I've seen the films, but is there ever any real explanation? I don't think
I think in the in the sixth one, which is the one that I have seen the least. When I say the least, I think I saw it once and that was it. And I am a Freddy guy. Yeah. Like, he was my guy. All the way up to the Dream Child, which, again, it's terrible, but I still had a fondness for it. One, it was the first Freddy movie I ever saw in theater. Mm. And two, it sort of had that connectivity to the previous films with referencing his mother, who was the nun and all that. But they sort of shied away from explaining it. And again, there are some films or some franchises where you need things explained, right? And there's others where you don't. And I think having Freddy's dream powers explained, or how he was gifted these, who gives a shit? It's just like the Force. I don't care about midichlorians. Just fuck it. It's the Force. That's just what it is, right? Mm.
No, Freddy had midichlorians that went evil when he became an undead in your dream Sith Lord, obviously.
Yeah, I guess that kind of, you know, when you frame it like that, it just got even cooler.
I mean, like, you know, I don't need the explanation, but the way it just happens is very silly. Like, okay.
Kind and Freddie almost seems to, he seems like, oh, you guys are screwed now.
Yeah.
You lit me on fire. You in trouble.
It's like all fun and, you know, it's hilarious.
It seems pretty excited about being lit ablaze.
Yeah, I know, right? I was going to say, I do like the little, you know, few minute like flashback to sort of Freddy's origin or beginnings in Freddy versus Jason. And I think, you know, the way that sort of thing was, like, that I could see more expanded in the history kind of thing. Whereas, you know, that kind of had more of a budget compared to this.
Fair enough.
But that's kind of, you know, if I think of, like, Freddy when he was alive, that's kind of the thing I get. And I feel like that kind of, that portrayal, I think, worked a bit better than it does here.
Yeah, no, very true, very true. And again, like you mentioned the script, and yes, the script is not great, but nothing worse than a combination of not a great script followed up with terrible acting. And that lead actor was just awful. Like, you've got the mob, you got the mob that's chasing him down, and then he's kind of like, guys, we shouldn't do this. Mm. And then I think Freddie says something, he's just like, the law's on vacation. It's just like, wow, that was okay. This is where we're going. And and again, too, I understand it's a 45 minute episode, so things do kind of have to move fast. But then again, I believe his name was Officer Blocker. He spills the beans pretty quick about the mob, you know, about I think there was the other cop. He's like, oh, we did something really bad. It's like, whoa, dude, hey, vet this guy out.
Tell anyone. What are you doing?
Guys, just play your cards a little bit closer to your vest there.
Yeah. One thing before we kind of wrap up this episode that I did.
No, I got lost to say. Let's keep talking about this.
Sure, go. Go for gold.
Sarcasm.
I do like how they incorporated the glove in that Freddy uses that. Well, like, obviously, as it while he's alive to do it. And those kind of visuals, I think, were pretty good. That's something, you know, a positive, I'll give it.
And one last thing that I can say as a positive was they did make reference to the junkyard where they dispose of the body. And that was tied into Nightmare 3 and 4. Yeah. And I thought that was great as well.
Yeah, I agree.
But overall, got a lot of holes. You give him an A for effort, but the execution was lacking somewhere.
Yeah, pretty much. Normally on this podcast, when we watch episodes and stuff, we give it a rating out of 5.
That's so tough, though. So tough, right? You give me yours and give me a chance to think about what I would fairly rate this.
Yeah. So, look, out of 5, I think my fair rating for this would be a solid 3 Freddy Krueger on fire laughing for some reason out of 5. So I think, look, like you said, definitely an A for effort, maybe more like a D on execution. It's a mixed bag for me personally, but I think some of the negatives make it a bit positive because it is kind of funny with the hokey acting and stuff. So I think a 3 out of 5 is pretty
funny. Yeah, it's tough to argue. I don't know if you will allow half scores because I was going to go with a 2.5.
That is perfectly acceptable.
So much of the same reasons. I remember watching it and I was not just waiting for it to end, which is something I experienced with this next episode that we're going to talk about. I was like, let's just fucking get this thing over with. There's value in it. You have to factor in when it was made, but overall, especially if you're a fan of the franchise, definitely worth your time to check it out.
Yeah. If people don't watch any other episodes of the series, I do think that one is worth a watch. If you love your Nightmare on Elm Street, Freddy Krueger, it's one of those interesting little snippets to check out. But we will go on to this. What did I say it was before? It was episode 14 of Freddy's Nightmare. Yes, Black Tickets. Now, as I read this little thing, I think people will understand why we're talking about it. So, Black Tickets episode was directed by George Kaxander. I cannot pronounce names.
Never heard of him.
And it stars someone we would have never heard of ever, Brad Pitt, but also Kerry Wall, Bill Moseley, and Don Sparks. And the plot from IMDb, which sounds a little bit better than the previous one, a young couple elope in search of freedom, but find themselves trapped in Springwood. So,
nasty Springwood.
Yeah. In case anybody didn't know, one of Brad Pitt's early roles was starring in an episode of Freddy's Nightmares. And as you did mention, quite a few people, I think, worked on this show who later became a more well-known.
I mean, it was interesting. I didn't realize that Bill Moseley was in it until I was quickly going through the IMDb to see, did anyone else come out of this? And I didn't recognize him as the tow truck driver.
Yes.
Brad Pitt, man. Damn. Like, this came out, what, I think it was like February of 89. And he'd been around for a little bit, mostly TV. And this was 2 years before his breakout role in Thelma and Louise.
Yeah.
And I think you and I touched on it before you started recording. It's crazy how some actors, they have the ability to get better. They work on their trade and they eventually are able to go on to reach the levels of success like Brad. Mm. Others don't. And of the two, did you say the name of the actress that starred in this?
Kerry Wall.
I think she had 11 credits to her name and was out of the industry not very long after. And I didn't think she was that bad compared to him.
No, she wasn't. She was actually quite solid.
Yeah, Brad had his moments, but there was some where he just like, yee, ooh, boy.
Yeah.
Didn't get another chance to do another line read on that one. That's kind of tough.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because Brad Pitt auditioned for Freddy's Revenge, Nightmare on Elm Street 2, for the lead of Jesse, and he didn't get it. And
interesting.
Seeing his acting in this, I kind of understand why.
But now you saying that makes me want to see that movie. I want to see...
It would be interesting.
Oh my God, yeah.
See Brad Pitt as Jesse.
With all the gay subtext that's in that movie, goddamn, I want to see that movie now.
Yeah. It's very bizarre. There are a lot of weird movies that Brad Pitt could have been in back in the 80s.
I remember hearing a story where his mom was upset with him because he turned down an opportunity to be in Apollo 13. And she's like, but you should really work with that Tom Hanks boy. And he's like, yeah, you should see the one that I chose instead, mom. And that's when he went on to do Seven. So I don't think she was very happy with his choice. But I, you know what? Quickly touching on Brad, I was always getting into a different territory. I identify as Fran. No, I was always a fan of his work. I always thought he was a good actor, even when he was like the sex symbol with the long hair and things like Interview with a Vampire, Legends of the Fall. I always thought the guy could act, and it's nice to see that is true, because you look at his breadth of work and the things he's done. I mean, the guy can do it.
Oh, yeah. He's had a lot of great, you know, roles, and 12 Monkeys is a personal favorite. I think he just loses himself in that. And, you know, Seven, really good.
Snatch. Loved him.
Oh, Snatch, yes. So good. Like, you know, even in something that I didn't think much of as a film, like Meet Joe Black, I actually thought he was pretty decent in it. Bad Irish accent aside,
The Devil's Own,
that's the one. Still pretty good, accent aside. Like,
I didn't mind it, but it's funny that you mentioned Meet Joe Black, because I put a reference to Meet Joe Black in here, as it kind of reminded me of the start of Meet Joe Black. You know, here's this Brad Pitt. You're like, oh, it's Brad Pitt. And then he gets hit by a car. And I'm like, oh, where have I seen this before?
I know. I was thinking the same thing. So, yeah, this episode is... this might be the weirdest after-school special PSA I have ever seen.
Very, very good pull. Yeah.
I mentioned before about things being a bit too on the nose. This episode, it's beyond being obvious what it is doing by the end, at least. This is kind of a very weird one, though.
Yeah, it was, again, I was very distracted by the low production value.
Oh, like, it got worse from episode one to number 14.
But not even so much the stuff where they're in the motel. And, you know, like, okay, whatever, they're in an enclosed space. But when they were on the highway after their car broke down, at no point did it ever feel like they were outside.
No.
Like, it's just like, oh my God, like the sound quality, the echo of their footsteps as they're out in the middle of the stretch of highway. I'm just like, guys, this, can we not clean up this, the sound quality just a bit? But yeah. What are you going to do, right?
Oh, it's so obvious. It's like on a set. It's so cheesy. But yeah, the two characters are, you know, meant to be 18. They're run away from home because their parents are controlling their lives. They've eloped, I think, or getting eloped, or they've eloped, and they break down in Springwood, which is
kind of a place to break down.
It's not a good, it's a bit, the town is kind of a villain in the show as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, then they sort of have all these really weird things start happening.
With those badass grandparents, eh?
What the hell was that?
Fuck. They went dark quick. Just make the phone call. Just like, sure, that's what you want us to do. We'll do it.
Jesus.
They got jacked up there big time.
Old people rob them. Brad Pitt's character gets hit by a car, but then suddenly fine.
That was great. It's like, we need to go to the hospital. Yes, I was hit by a car. Dude, shouldn't you be like lying on the ground or something there? That was not very well done.
I don't know what just happened.
And I have had my vehicle towed on more than one occasion, and I have never had a rhyming tow truck driver before. And I'm kind of sad about that.
I think you should be disappointed that you did not have a tow truck driver like Buzz, played by Bill Moseley.
I think that would have made the experience much more enjoyable.
Yeah, he looked, because he's not in a whole bunch of makeup or anything, he looks like this nerdy little skinny kid. It's funny. He looks kind of adorable in a weird way.
Yeah, it was definitely not as threatening as you're accustomed to seeing him, right? Yeah. And the Rob Zombie stuff. But it's also weird, too. Like, again, like, I feel like it's punching down, picking on the acting performances. But again, like, when they go to the motel, I mean, that purveyor of the motel, he couldn't decide whether he wanted to be like a Southern preacher or like a small town yokel. It's like,
I know.
Like pick one. Just pick one, man.
I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Who are you?
Yeah.
It was, oh, God. And the hotel room is just very bizarre. But, you know, weird, really just bizarre things keep happening. And then I guess it's like halfway through the episode, Brad Pitt wakes up and all the bad things were a dream. And it's kind of like, you know, it's the dream kind of telling him that he shouldn't be running away. Running away is not going to solve his problems, kind of moral, I guess.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know, fear of the unknown.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. It was a weird message because, again, they were just two young kids in love. And I guess, if you're 18 and you run off to elope, probably not the smartest decision. But I thought the consequences were kind of heavy. They're kind of heavy, right?
Really, really heavy. So I don't know, like, was the moral meant to be you got to stay with your parents forever? Or I don't know.
Perhaps not make rash decisions because the consequences may not turn out so well if you don't plan things out. And it was clear that they didn't really have anything planned out. And I think that was sort of the underlying message there. But I had stated to you, I do not remember watching the Brad Pitt version. That was sort of that was Rick's story. I remember Miranda's story. I remember that very well. But I thought it was interesting that they decided to take the two characters and yet give them both very different storylines. Were we to the assume that maybe they were both hit on the highway as they were trying to run away?
I have no idea. It's the episode kind of makes it hard to understand. Like, what point in time are they? Like, have they been at this motel for a while? Are they living there now? I don't understand. Has this all happened in their head? You know, did they get hit? Yeah, get hit by a car. I have no idea. No,
because they sort of they wrap up the Brad Pitt storyline, and I was just like, oh, I guess this is done. Because in my mind, I was like, how can they drag this out for another 20 minutes?
Yeah,
I don't know where they can go. Yeah. And then boom, they switch to what she's dealing with. And it was not, it definitely wasn't on the theme of running away or escaping your problems. It was, they were settled. They were together and trying to build their lives and their career. And then she finds out that she may or may not be expecting. And then that launches off into her own journey.
So it's like, okay, so did they just decide to randomly settle in Springwood? And she's got a job, he's got a job, and now she might be pregnant. And
it's
very bizarre.
It seems like, listen, we've already paid them for this portion. We'll just have them come on and continue on in a completely different storyline. I think it would have been better served to have two different actors playing playing those roles, because the two, I just couldn't see how the two were supposed to match up. Not that they needed to, but it was like, wait a minute, what's going on here?
Yeah, it's so confusing because they don't explain like anything. And then next thing you know, like, she's pregnant and they're like, okay, let's have the baby, whatever, la la la. And then she's ready to pop out a baby, and then she has a baby and he just gives no shits about her and she's just left to look after the baby. I'm like, what is this?
Yeah, it was interesting, but I can imagine that, again, you know, I do have a child myself, but I did not birth said child. So I can imagine being an expecting mother that would play on a lot of the fears and experiences that you would be worried about going through as you go into motherhood. So I thought that aspect was kind of well done. I thought it was a better vignette than the first vignette. I thought it made more sense. And I thought the twist ending was a lot better than what we got with the Brad Pitt episode. The Brad Pitt episode, like, we kind of got it right off the bat. It's like, he got hit by a car, he's in a fever dream, and then he realizes that he got hit by a car. Whereas this one, I thought the twist ending landed better.
Yeah, it's bizarre and comes out of nowhere, but at least you'll remember it. Like, you know, I get sort of, you know, the visual element of it, of the fear of motherhood and stuff like that. But this made me absolutely terrified to ever have a child. It seems like the worst thing in the world. This makes it like, don't ever, ever have children. I don't think that was the point. I think this was trying to hammer home, be responsible if you're a sexually active teenager.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah, you know. I guess so. But it's always so funny whenever you see these things that are touching on the sacrifice, especially for a young person. Like, I had my child much later in life. I was in my mid to late 30s, I believe, when I first became a parent. And it's different. I can't imagine how many sacrifices that I would have had to have given to have a child at 18, 19, 20. So yeah, I can appreciate what they were trying to do with that.
Yeah, I think it was more like, try and be responsible, and you know, don't throw away your life by having fun with someone, kind of whatever. But then, you know, she has this whole, it's her fever dream of what if she's pregnant. And then she does the test and she gets all excited. Oh, I'm going to have my life all together. I'm not pregnant. And then she falls over. And then the next thing we know, boop, twist ending. What the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was, but I still, it was kind of clever, you know, Brad Pitt there giving his pre-Oscar performance of, what are you telling me, doctor?
Yeah,
it's all in her head. But yeah, it's, again, trying to be fair, I thought it was better executed than the previous one. So for that, when we get to the grading, I would probably we'd almost have to grade the two different vignettes separate from each other, right? Because I think this one would land a little bit higher than the other one.
Yeah, I think the second part, I think, is definitely better handled. And it does have the what the fuck twist ending. She's essentially, Miranda somehow is stuck with the mind of a child and she's looking after a baby doll.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Like, well, that's the twist. You feared having a child.
Yeah, now boom, you are.
Now you're stuck as a child.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, what? I was not expecting that whatsoever. But I actually thought, like, her performance was quite solid for the most part, whereas his was very...
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. And it's ironic that one is out of the industry now and the other is winning Oscars. So
I know. It's bizarre.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think kind of the ratings for two different sections, I'd probably give the Brad Pitt-centric one like 1.5 out of 5. And I think I'd give
the second one
2.5 out of 5.
I would say for the Brad Pitt one, 1.5 out of 5, definitely. Mm. I think the only redeeming quality is you're sitting there going, ah, that's Brad Pitt.
Exactly.
Ah, that's Bill Moseley. But save that. If it was any other person in that role that didn't go on to the career that Brad had, you'd be like, this is fucking awful.
Yeah.
Right? Like the scene where he's getting taken away by the cops and he's kicking the back of their seats and then the car goes around a corner and there's this terrible looking explosion.
Oh my God.
And he wanders back in the hotel. He's like, I'm in a little trouble, Miranda. I killed the cops. You can't run. It's like, I can run from anything.
I'm running away.
This is really bad. But
it's so not good.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's about a 1.5.
Yeah.
And that's strictly on the fact you get to see a young Brad Pitt. Yeah. And I would go as far as giving the second one a 3. I thought it was well executed. I thought it was a good story and a fun twist ending, much like all those classic Twilight Zone episodes. Mm. And that's basically what the series becomes, is a updated version of the Twilight Zone where you've got to have those twist endings. And for that, I'll give it a 3.
Yeah, that twist ending is unlike anything I've seen and was not expecting it. So, yeah. I mean, I think overall, like the episode, I'd probably say 2.5 out of 5. But yeah, the very, very interesting, two very different stories with both episodes. And I'm sure there are many other episodes that will probably be worthy of a revisit at some point.
I have one other one that is stuck in my head. I can't remember what it was called, but it was the same thing. It was a young person who was living in Springwood, and I believe his parents wanted him to stay, put down roots, and get into the family business, and he was trying to pull away. I think it might even be the second episode. I'll have to double check for that. But that one, which ironically was that one and the second half of the previous
and
one we talked about,
were
the ones that stuck out in my head. So.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Right.
We might have to revisit a couple more episodes and hopefully Bede will be around to join us as well.
It'll
be fun. It was really, really good to revisit a couple of episodes and have a bit of a deep dive into them. And you know what? I still think this show needs like a remaster and re-release because it's so worth checking out just for the fact that there was a Nightmare on Elm Street, Twilight Zone, you know, Tales from the Crypt type TV show. So if us talking about it on a podcast helps get people talking about it again.
Yeah, shine a light on it.
Release it. I
remember being in a thrift store back in the late 90s and seeing a VHS copy of Freddy's Nightmares. I think it was like season 1, part 1. And I was like, I should buy this. But I don't own a VCR.
I still have my VCR and I remember those at the video store for rent.
Nice little trip back memory lane.
Yeah, but
thanks so much for having me on to talk about one of my favorite characters, Marcy.
Yes, one of mine too.
If we get around and want to talk some more Freddy, I would love to come back on for that.
Absolutely, we'll do that. And
fantastic.
And as we usually do on every podcast, we give our guest time to shine a light on what they do and where people can find them. So,
oh yeah, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Dan Mackles. And if you want to listen to my stuff, I've got a couple of things on the go. Mostly right now, I'm focusing on Sopranos Redefined, which I'm doing with Ben from Film Floggers. We're going episode through episode of the classic series. And it's fun because he's never seen it before. This is my second time viewing it after its original run. And it's enjoyable to watch it through someone else's eyes and then see it again as a much more mature individual. And eventually I'll get back to my original podcast, You Gotta See This, with my co-host Carolina Jimenez. And if you're into movies and friends talking about it, you can find us on Twitter as well.
Yes. Always easy on the Twitter, and you can look up those podcasts on all your major podcast streaming platforms. And as for us here, everything you need is at supermarcy.com, and the Super Network is on all your social medias and podcast streaming platforms. So just look up the Super Network. We're on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, everything. And me personally, you can find me on Twitter at supermarcy. And if you want to follow me on Letterboxd and see what I'm watching, because I do remember to post all that now, but, you know, digress. I'm super_Marcy. And until next time, this has been the Podcasters of Horror. And keep watching your horror anthologies because they're awesome. Thank you very much for joining me, Dan, and catch you all next time.
Peace.
Peace. Super Network is proudly sponsored by Surfshark VPN. Why would you have a VPN in this day and age? Well, a lot of people are quite concerned about tracking and their online privacy, and using a VPN ensures that you are safe and secure online. Surfshark VPN provides a lot of extra added layers of security, as well as ad blocker and a kill switch if your information is ever compromised. A great bonus feature with having Surfshark is something is not available on your streaming service in your country. You just pop on that Surfshark VPN and you can probably find so much more streaming in different countries. If you want to find something like Masters of Horror, it is available on Tubi. So just select the correct country and you'll be able to watch such a great and fantastic show. Surfshark VPN is one of the most reliable and cheapest of the VPNs out there, with up to 81% off offer when you subscribe for 24 months. Please use the link surfshark.deals/supernetwork to take advantage of this amazing deal. You can also find the link in the show notes. Thank you, Surfshark. Surfy shark doo 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 doo. Surfy shark doo 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 doo. And now back to the show.